You're listening to the Home Base Podcast. This week, we're talking about STEM, not STEM cells. We're talking about STEM education. To find out what that is, stay tuned. Hey there, all my lovely podcast listeners. Hope you all are having a wonderful week. I think this week, I always tell you guys how awesome and amazing you are at the end of the podcast. And it dawned on me, I was like, you know, some of you maybe aren't sticking it out until the end. So I'm going to start off by telling you guys how awesome you are at the beginning of the podcast this week. So you all are awesome, you're amazing, and you all are the entire reason why I sit down and carve this time out into my weekly schedule. And because, honestly, I love doing it, I love doing the podcast, I love doing the research, and getting it all out there to you guys. So it's a passion. So what are some ways you can reach out to me to let me know of some topics or some things you would like me to talk about on the podcast? The easiest way is to just email me directly at homebasepodcasts@gmail.com. Or the awesomest way ever is to just go straight to the blog, which is meganpoteet.wordpress.com. And if you're not sure how to spell my name, it should be right there on whatever app you are using that has the podcast name on it. My name is right underneath the title there. So, meganpoteet.wordpress.com. If you go to the blog, you'll find all of the podcast episodes on there. And you'll also find I do about a post a week on there of some extra goodies for you guys. And you will also find a link to me on Pinterest, and you'll also find a link to the podcast on Twitter. And honestly, the Twitter account is amazing. Not to like toot my little horn here, but I do go through and I like look at tons of parenting Twitter people, and I look through all of their feeds and all of their posts, and I pick the best of the best and retweet them. And I also put tweets on there from the podcast and stuff. So anything I talk about in the podcast, I tweet it on there, links for you guys, everything, it's right there. So totally go check out us on Twitter at Homebase Podcasts. You can find us really easily there. And then from there, you can also find me personally, my personal Twitter's on there too. If you just love me that much that you want to go follow me individually on Twitter, then I welcome it. Give me some shout outs. But most importantly, I do need all of you lovely listeners to get onto iTunes and subscribe, and send me some feedback. Give us some reviews. They don't have to be great reviews. Any feedback is welcome. But the more reviews we get, the more, the higher up we're going to be on the charts, and the more we're going to pop up for new parents that are looking for a podcast. So if you love the podcast at all, please give us a shout out. That way we can get it out to other people and do what we do. So yeah. So I'm really excited. This week we're going to take a break from all of my baby drama, all of the teething and all of that excitement. We're going to take a break from talking baby, and we're going to talk about something that affects all parents, everyone. You're going to, if you haven't crossed this bridge, you're going to cross it soon, and so I'm going to share some information with you. I have talked briefly about my background as a teacher. I was a teacher before I became a mommy. I've worked with ages from 6 months all the way up to 12 years of age. So very wide bracket there. So I can kind of relate to anyone wherever you are in your walk of parenthood. I can feel you. And so I've done that, and I've done it in all sorts of different settings. I've done it in daycare settings and school settings and high-end after school program settings and parks, and got a lot of different perspectives here for you. So I bring a lot to the table, and one thing I have had asked of me a lot, and I've noticed a lot of people don't know a lot about, is STEM. You've probably seen this term thrown around on Pinterest. You're looking for activities to do with your kids during the summer, and you see STEM activities. Do this STEM math activity, STEM science, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, what is this? What is STEM? STEM education. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, math, is what STEM stands for. So it is a lovely acronym. And that's what we're talking about this week, guys. We're talking STEM, not stem cells. We're talking about STEM education. So we're just going to dive right in. I'm not even going to do a bunch of banter with you guys. We're getting in there. I'm so excited about this. I've been researching all week, and I'm so excited to share with you guys some awesome STEM stuff. So, just a brief history on STEM education, and again, that is an acronym standing for science, technology, engineering, and math. If you're like me, I just think of those really, really brainy, smart people when I hear STEM, because it's all those really tedious degrees. but a brief history of STEM. So, back in 1957, when the Soviet Union launched Sputnik, the U.S. kind of was like, uh-oh, someone else beat us to space. So in 58 is when we created NASA, and that really was kind of the beginning spark to STEM education. It really got people interested in science and math, technology, engineering, all of that. So that is kind of where everything very, very beginning started, was back with our trips to outer space. So that's pretty cool, I think. Me and my husband, every time, we love watching Apollo 13. It's probably one of our favorite movies of all time. And because, you know, who doesn't love Tom Hanks? And who doesn't love a good space movie? I mean, come on. We both just, every time we watch the movie, it never fails. We have to, like, discuss space and what it would be like to go to space after that, and we talk about different things, and we both just get so starry and dreamy-eyed over it, because, come on, it's everyone's dream to go to space. Maybe not necessarily to do the whole Maybe not to do that whole rocket launch thing. Maybe, you know, that part, yeah, totally scary. But just to be able to see outer space would be amazing. And it would be a chance of a lifetime. So I totally can understand how when we launched NASA and, you know, our first couple space missions, I totally understand where there was this huge burst of interest in STEM studies. Because, I mean, come on. If you can get a job as an astronaut, who wouldn't be interested in that? So that was the beginning. So we're talking back in 1958, okay, guys? And then we, you know, things started to climb. People started getting interested in STEM studies. In 1983 is when Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, released a report called A Nation at Risk. If you have children that are in school and you have not heard of this report, I highly recommend you can download a PDF and you can read it. Everybody needs to be familiar with A Nation at Risk, because that's where we got our Common Core standards. And it really highlights the importance of STEM education. So if you're not familiar with that report, you need to be. And I believe you can download the PDF. I've downloaded it before right on my computer. I believe you can also actually buy it in book form, if you're one of those people that really needs to have a book of everything, which I honestly am. So I can relate. But so it was a report put out in 1983, and that's where we got all our Common Core standards that are now implemented in all of our public schools. And if you're not familiar with those, that is also information that you can get online. Please familiarize yourself with the Common Core standards. It's just good to know what's expected of your kids in school and what you should be expecting of them, you know. But this report really did highlight the importance of STEM education and how basically our entire nation and the world, everything is moving forward. It is becoming so technologically advanced, and we have to stay on the cutting edge of everything, or as a nation, we are going to fall behind. You know, that's just a fact. Obviously, it is laid out way more, articulated way better in the report. I'm giving you guys the super summarized version. But basically, the entire theory behind STEM education is we need to push this because our kids aren't being educated in it and they're not ready for it. And we really need, we just don't want to fall behind as a nation because that is where we are going. So that is the major importance of STEM education. And that is the very brief history. Now I'm going to throw some crazy, scary numbers at you guys. And this, when I was doing research for this, scared the crap out of me, honestly. It's kind of terrifying. First off, the percentage of top-performing high school students who majored in STEM peaked in the 90s at only 27%. That kind of crazy. Only 27% of high school students were majoring in some kind of STEM-related education. So that's kind of crazy. At our peak, it was only 27%. And then from the 90s, it plummeted down in the early 2000s all the way down to 18%. I'm sorry, actually, it plummeted down to 14%. So from 27 to 14%. So in today's age, 14% of our high school students are actually majoring in one of these fields. And that's just kind of scary. Because 80% of our projected jobs for the next in the next 10 years, 80% of our jobs will require some kind of technology background. Because we are just such a tech-savvy world, and this is the way our world is going. And where is my awesome statistic, just to kind of give you guys an idea of how many jobs we're talking here? From 2000 to 2010, STEM-related jobs grew 7.9%. So that's a big amount. In 10 years, it grew almost 8% the amount of jobs needed in that field. Non-STEM related jobs, so, you know, put your thinking cap on and think of some non-STEM related jobs. I used to be a cosmetologist, a hairdresser in the less fancy sounding terms. A hairdresser would not be a STEM related job. So there you go. There's an example of a non-STEM job. Those jobs only grew 2.6% in 10 years. So you're talking a 5.3% difference. So obviously STEM jobs are in high demand, and we only have 14% of our high school students are actually headed into fields in there. So if I have your attention now, that's kind of scary. just to scare you even more, 2009 was the last time, these are the most recent numbers I can find on this, and honestly, I think it's the last time these numbers were ran. In 2009, U.S. ranked 23rd in science. Our high school students were ranked 23rd in science. Kind of scary. 23 other countries ahead of us. And we ranked 31st in math, which is just absolutely crazy. Oh, crazy, crazy. So obviously we need to work on that there. We're a little behind. But here's where, as parents, here's where you can kind of get involved and really do some research when you're looking at putting your kids into schools and you're trying to make tough decisions. Here are some numbers that you need to be aware of, and then you need to ask the questions. So, high school students that were taught by teachers with no major or no certification in their subject area. Okay, so we're talking, here's a percentage of students that went to class and were taught by someone who had no certification, no background, nothing in the class they were teaching, okay? 31% of these students that went to math class fell under this category. 31%. 45% of biology students were being taught by someone with no certification or background in biology. 61%. Over half of our American students in high school are being taught chemistry by people with no chemistry background. 66% in physics, 79% in earth and space science. This is where, as a parent, I know my child is only 7 months old, but just as a parent, I'm looking at this going, oh my gosh, this is terrible. This is unacceptable. And you have to wonder, like, what is the demand? You know, what standards are we holding for teachers? And this is coming from a former teacher. So for me to hold that criticism out on myself and say, you know, what kind of standards are we holding our teachers to? That, I mean, these are intense categories: math, biology, chemistry, physics, earth and space science, and you have very high percentages of people that have no background in what they're teaching our kids. What does that say about our education? I really encourage everyone to maybe stop and rethink where your child's at school, and maybe ask those tough questions when you go for interviews and stuff. Ask, you know, never be ashamed to ask. I always encouraged my students' parents to ask me what my background was and what my resume was, essentially. I wasn't going to be offended by it. I'm sitting there teaching your kid. And I spent lots of time with their children every day, so I had no problem with them asking that question. So please be responsible and ask your teachers what their backgrounds are, or, you know, get involved. This is where you really gotta take it upon yourself to get the answers to these tough questions. So, there we go. There's some pretty scary numbers right there. Now that I've scared everybody out of their wits. Oh, so obviously STEM education is very important. It's fundamental in our nation's future. And now you all know what the acronym STEM means. But it is insanely true. Our nation is falling behind in the math and science and technology and engineering world, and we need kids to enter in this realm. And so look down at your little ones. They are our future. Go tell them, say, no, put that book down. Go get your calculator. Oh, and I think it is difficult because from a teacher's perspective, I know that I have had people come into my classroom and tell me, you know, no, you need to stop doing this sciencey activity and you need to be reading this book. And, you know, I remember when I was back teaching kindergarten, and me and my co-teacher, we had a specialist that came into our classroom and told us that what we were trying to teach the kids wasn't appropriate and that we needed to stop. And mind you, we were teaching them how to read and and Spanish, and we were doing all sorts of fun activities with them. We did a cooking segment, and she told us that all the things were great, but that we needed to stick to our curriculum, and that we needed to focus a lot on literacy and art. And I think that's great, and absolutely we need to focus on those things, but just that we're starting that young to discourage kids from math and science is really disheartening. So I just, like I said, former teacher and a parent, so really kind of take that all in, and I really encourage you all to really take into account what's going on at your kids' schools. But yeah, there's my little two cents there. Oh, so when you go on your lovely Pinterest or internet and searching for fun STEM activities, because now hopefully you all are scared out of your wits and you're pumped up and you want to go get your kids involved in some STEM activities, you're probably going to get on there and you're going to see all sorts of stuff, like STEM versus STEAM. So, lo and behold, of course, when there's anything like this, there's going to be a war going on that you didn't know was going on. There are lots of people out there that have taken the STEM initiative that has been outlined for us by several very intelligent people that are educational specialists for high up in the government. And they've taken this STEM initiative and they have, of course, found faults with it. And that brings out STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, art, and math. These people will argue that if you focus just on STEM, you are only working with the left side of your brain, and that you also need to work with the right side of your brain. I would say to these people that they are not focusing on the right point that is being outlined in these reports, that we are falling short in STEM. I don't believe anyone has said you should only focus on STEM studies. Obviously, a well-rounded education is what you want for your child. So just don't fall prey to the battles that are going on online. There's all sorts of people out there that are creating new acronyms and new ways that they think education should be formed. And I think the whole thing behind the STEM initiative is just to say that we are falling short in these areas. These are the areas we are severely lacking, and we need to try to pump those areas up. No one is saying we need to only focus on science, technology, engineering, and math. By no means should we leave out the arts and literacy. So let me throw out some other acronyms for you guys to look out for. And I am only mainly throwing them out because I think some of them are just kind of funny. So I've already told you guys STEAM. How about STREAM, which is science, technology, religion, engineering, art, and mathematics. I'm all for people studying religion. I think it's great. But to throw it in and say that that's our highest priority as a nation, I just think is incredibly false. I think if we want to move forward and succeed and compete with other countries, then we need to really be pushing ourselves in the other areas. But so I think it's kind of funny. What else do we have here? We have MINT, which is Mathematics, Information Sciences, Natural Sciences, and Technology. So a lot of sciences right there, and they completely cut out engineering. Metals. This one's kind of cool. I like the acronym. Again, they throw in the arts, but I just think it's cool how they put it together. Metals is math, engineering, technology, art, logics, and science. I thought that one was kind of cool. There's all sorts in here. We've got metals, mint, strem, steam, stream, GEMS, which is Girls in Engineering, Math, and Science. And then we have STEM, which is Science, Technology, Engineering, Mathematics, and Medicine. The STEM with the two M's, I honestly think that one is probably pretty true. I think we really could use some more study in medicine. I think as a country, we could totally focus on that. But honestly, who couldn't, you know? spending time studying medicine is always a great thing and a good advancement. So really take the whole STEM initiative and as on the surface. Don't dig deep and try to find some twisted thing that's wrong with it. I really don't think it's there. I really think people are trying to promote STEM because that's where we need to grow and that's where we need to advance. So, I've already told you guys the history. I've told you guys how the history has impacted us, and as we found, the numbers do not look good. We're falling very short. So, what are some things we can do with our kids now when they're little or when they're older at home to really kind of get some excitement built around math and technology? I don't think our kids really need help being excited about technology. I don't know about you, but almost every kid I see out somewhere is glued to some form of technology or another. But how do we get them excited about science? How do we get them excited about math? What can we do in those areas to really get them pumped up? Luckily for you guys, I'm going to have a post, and it should be up by the time this is out, so it's Saturday. I will try to get it out at least by Monday. I'll get a post up with links to tons of different activities you guys can do, because I'm not going to sit here and read them all to you, because that's just a waste of your time and mine, because you're not going to be able to understand my instructions of how to assemble a catapult on a podcast. So we're going to I'll just put some links on the blog for you guys to check out, and you can find things there. And really the easiest thing to do is just go straight to Pinterest and type in STEM activities, or even go to my Pinterest page. I have an education board that has all sorts of awesome stuff on there. But I will get a blog post up with tons of links that will go directly to pages of activities with instructions, so check that out. And I'll put a link up to that blog post too on Twitter, so if you're a big Twitter fan, you can just go on there and favorite the post and reference it later. So, but what are some things that I can share with you guys now that you guys can do maybe with your itty bitty ones to kind of get them started right early on? I have to tell you, today, me and my 7-month-old, we made a sensory bottle, and I love sensory bottles. And if you're sitting there listening and you're going, what on earth is a sensory bottle? Well, guess what? You're going to find out right after the break. Hey guys, we're back. So as promised, we're going to talk about sensory bottles. They're my favorite thing, I think, ever to make with kids. I always made them no matter where I was working. Even my 12-year-olds that I worked with loved the sensory bottles. And they're really fun to make and let them take home. I always had some in the classroom, though. Some of you might have seen them referred to as timeout bottles. They're the bottles that have a ton of glitter and all sorts of fun things in them, and you turn them upside down and shake them up, and then the child has to sit there at the table and watch the glitter settle down. And when it's all settled, supposedly they're supposed to be settled down, and then they can come back and join the group. I do think that's a great way to use them if you are someone that likes to do the whole timeout method. I will say I've tried it with a few kids that had a few anger issues, and typically the ones that get sent to a timeout or asked to step away from the group are the ones with anger issues. And so if they have an anger issue, typically they tend to just pick up the bottle and throw it. And that doesn't really work. So I would see it working maybe with younger kids. But even then, you know, you never know. So take that suggestion there with a grain of salt. But they are really fun to make and just have in the classroom to play with or to take home. So like I said, they're bottles. You can fill them up with water. You can fill them up with anything. The ones I have made for my 7-month-old, we have made all sizes. We've done the little travel bottles of like the Johnson & Johnson's shampoo, because I got a couple of those at my baby shower. And I actually, on a couple out of them, I poured the shampoo out because he's got eczema, so I can't use that shampoo on him anyways. But anywho, so we did little travel sizes, which are perfect. They fit right in his hand. They're small enough for him to play with and enjoy. And what I would do is I would fill them up with water. I would put some glitter in there. You could put buttons in there or some beads. And then we have three of the teeny ones, and I did the primary colors with food coloring, and then I hot glue the lid shut. And what's really cool with the primary colors, and they're so small, is if you hold them up to a light and you stack them on top of each other, you can make green and purple. And so it's really cool because you can kind of, as he gets older, obviously he's too little to get it now, but when he gets older, we can do that and do the different colors. And so that's really cool. So we've done the little travel sizes. I've done a full size, like a normal size bottle of the shampoo. And that one, it's big enough that he can kind of shake it around and it's a little bit more fun. And then I did like the big bottle of water. It's not as big as a 2-liter, but it's not like your small bottle of water either. It's like a big one. I can't remember if it's like 24 or 32 ounces. I think it might be 32. And now I'm probably sounding dumb because I have no idea how many ounces are in a 2-liter off the top of my head. I think it's like 60 something. Anyways, so I think it's this big 32-ounce bottle of water, and it's the smart bottles, if you know what I'm talking about, the smart water. One of those big, huge bottles, and it's nice and smooth and round. And we did that, and we filled it up with water and glitter, and there's buttons and dice in there and beads and all sorts of stuff. I took a curling ribbon that you, like, wrap on presents. I took it and curled it and then cut it into little curly cues and put those in there. And it's just really fun. You shake it up, and the glitter shakes everywhere, and it's real sparkly and pretty, and then they can sit and watch it settle. And what's really fun is this one is, like, as big as he is, almost, and he can really actually see each individual piece of glitter because it's so big, and he loves sitting there and just watching it float down. It's wonderful. I love it. It's amazing. And what's really cool about this one, too, is it can lay on its side. And so when he's doing, like, tummy time, he can sit there and look at it. So they're really cool. I love sensory bottles. But outside of doing water, I've done ones, and you can find these actually on my home base podcast board on Pinterest. I've done ones with sand, and I've put, like, seashells in there and different stuff from the beach, and then the kids can, like, shake it around and find the different shells. I did a really cool one year. It was, like, water, and it was blue hair gel, and we put some soap in there to get some, like, foam, and we put some shells in there, and the bottle was, like, shaped like a wave. And so we called it a tidal wave, and it was really cool because the way it swirled because of the shape of the bottle, when the kids shook it, it made a little undertow. And so you could kind of see the shells would, like, toss over top of themselves like they were in a washer almost. And it was really cool because we were actually talking about oceans and stuff that week in class, and so it was really awesome to be able to physically show the kids how an undertow works. And that was really neat. Other ones we've done, I've done for really, really little kids. I've done the little fuzzy pom-poms that you can buy. I took a bottle once and I stuffed that bottle full of pom-poms and filled it up with water and soap. And we made a little label on it that said Fuzzies in the Wash. And the kids thought it was the coolest thing ever. It was their favorite sensory bottle. And I always had like at least four or five in the classroom. And that was always their favorite because they thought it was so cool that the fuzzies were like in a washing machine or something, because there was like the suds and it was really cute. So you can find pictures of these on Pinterest. I really encourage you to just get creative. You can teach about like water displacement and separation if you use water and like baby oil in there, and you can see them separate. So that's a fun science experiment you can talk about. And why they're called sensory bottles, if you haven't caught on, is it really engages a lot of your senses. It's got the awesome colors, so it really engages your vision and your hearing and the sound, and you're physically touching it. They're really awesome. They're great learning experiments, and you can really specialize it to whatever you're talking about that week or whatever your child's into. Say your child's into dinosaurs, go get some miniature dinosaurs and stuff them in a bottle. You can do jars if you, whatever you're wanting to put in there doesn't fit in the top of a little bottle. Get like a big ball jar and just fill it up with whatever, and they can shake it. Just always make sure you include something like glitter that floats. Because if you just have a bunch of heavy stuff, it's not that entertaining to just swoosh it up and down, because they just go clunk, clunk to one end to the other. So you need something light and that will fall kind of like a snow globe. So look into that. They're awesome. What else are things that you can do with your kids right now at home at any age to help stimulate some STEM interest? Bake something. Bake anything. I don't care what you're cooking. Especially if you're, honestly, no, I take that back. I don't care what you're cooking. You're probably measuring something at some point. You know, even if you're making tacos, you're probably measuring like seasoning for the tacos. So there's your math. I loved baking. I think I mentioned earlier in this episode that we had a cooking segment with the kids when I was teaching kindergarten, and we cooked. We cooked every month, twice a month. It was like every other week, and the kids and their parents would sign up for ingredients on the list, and they all happily did it, and there's never anything on the ingredient list that was more than like a dollar or two. And honestly, we had like a pantry. We just like stocked up on a lot of stuff. And we cooked every other week, and we would just cook different stuff, and we would go through it with the kids. We would talk about the math, we would talk about measurements, and we would explain to them what a fourth is, and it was a great opportunity to sit down and explain, and they would physically do it. If we were making something with flour, and they would measure out the flour. Me and my co-teacher, unless it was something that was dangerous, like cutting or doing the actual baking or cooking part, we didn't really get involved. We let them do it, and it was a great hands-on experience, and it really gave you an opportunity to sit down and talk about the math and talk about the science behind flour and yeast and why this is doing this. And I know popcorn was something we did one week. We did popcorn, and we talked about how the moisture inside, it heats and expands, and that's what makes the kernels pop. I mean, there's so much science in food. There's so much there you can really just elaborate on. Other great food things to do, popsicles. Popsicles are so easy. It's literally taking any kind of liquid and freezing it. You know, you can just make ice cubes and talk about the freezing process, and you're talking science. Go online. I'm not sure the exact science, I know I mentioned this last week, but if you go online, hot things freeze quicker than cold things. I cannot remember why for the life of me, but there's some science there. There's tons of science in cooking. Jell-O is a great example. You start out with something that's a powder. You add water, and it turns gelatinous, and then you put it in the refrigerator, and it turns to a solid. It's a great, great way to get some science and some math in there. So I highly encourage you guys, make sensory bottles, go cook something. Cooking is the greatest. And, you know, I will include for sure some awesome, easy cooking recipes on my blog post of STEM activities. So if you're really as jazzed about the whole cooking thing as I am, I will back you guys up 100%. I'll get you guys some info. Oh, and the great thing I always loved about cooking is it incorporated those areas of study, but it also was a great platform, obviously, to teach nutrition, which is something kids, you know, they come into this world and they have no knowledge of nutrition, so they're really relying on us to teach them that. And I think sometimes some parents forget that. I think they think it's kind of common sense nutrition, and they don't realize that that's something that needs to be taught. And you have a lot of kids that don't understand that the donut they're eating isn't good for them, you know? And I know that sounds crazy, but there's a lot, especially young kids, that just don't understand that. And I really wish parents could understand that eating habits are implanted in you as a child. You know, you become accustomed to certain things, and you get this mindset about food, and I just cannot encourage people enough. See, if you want to know what my conversational teaching weakness is food. I was such a big advocate for it when I was a teacher, and I could just completely do an entire podcast of nothing but talking about educating kids about food. But there really is a lot you can do there. And my last little thing I'm going to say before I drown on too much about food is I always hated it when kids were afraid of food. I grew up being afraid of certain foods. It was like my biggest fear. Whatever mom was making for dinner, I was terrified. It stressed me out all day. I had so much anxiety over what was for dinner. And I just hate when I run into kids that are like that, because it's so silly, for one thing. And I just always have to sit and wonder, like, you know, how has food been presented to this child that they become afraid of it? You know, nothing should be presented to us in a way that we become afraid of it, especially if it's not dangerous, you know? And what's dangerous about food, unless you have a peanut allergy or something like that, then yes, that peanut butter is very dangerous. So I really encourage everyone, get your sensory bottles going, go cook something this week, make something together with your kids, and get them excited about eating, get them excited about STEM studies, and you're going to see the rewards, I promise. Your child's going to be so much more excited about school and so much more excited about life, because this is the path our nation is going down. It's going down, science, technology, engineering, and math. It's where it's going. And I really am not trying to exclude the arts. If you all knew me a little bit more, and I know I've said that I'm this enormous book nerd, I actually am a writer myself and am writing children's books. And I cannot give you more emphasis that I love the arts so much. So please do not take this episode as that I am downplaying the arts, because I'm sure we will have an episode where I focus on art. In fact, I know it's on my my list of notes to have an episode where we do nothing but art activities. So it is coming. I love the arts, but I really did feel, I know I had a lot of people really asking me, what is STEM? What's the deal with STEM? And so I really wanted to just kind of get the info out there and let everybody know. That's what STEM is: science, technology, engineering, and math. I'm going to get a sip of my water here. I'm thirsty now. I'm talking way too fast. Oh, goodness. Excuse me, everybody. See, this is what happens to us teachers. You get us talking about education, we get really ramped up. So, but we're going to back off now, and we're going to talk about our quote this week. Oh, I haven't told you guys my thing I'm crushing on this week. What am I crushing on this week? What can I not live without this week? Oh, man. I didn't get this prepared. Let's think here for a second. So my son has still been teething, which has been awesome and exhausting. Oh, you know what I've been really excited about this week? I have been really excited. I talked briefly last week that I had found a recipe for homemade puffs. And I tried it, and I think I told you guys I didn't have parchment paper, so they kind of stuck to the cookie sheet, and it didn't work out. So I took the rest of the batter and used parchment paper, and they all peeled off great. So I have this little container of little homemade puffs, and it has been so cool, you guys, this week. Like, we started out giving them to him, and he did the whole, like, grabbing them with his whole hand, and then he didn't understand how to put them in his mouth because it was, like, inside his fist, and, you know, he didn't have his whole pincher grasp going on. And he's really getting it down now. It's been only a couple days, and he's really, like, he starts picking them up with his pinchers, and then normally, like, he goes ahead and wraps his fist around it after he's picked it up because it, like, starts to fall out. But he's at least getting that motion, which is really, really cool to watch. So that was the whole reason why I wanted to get him puffs, is everybody's like, oh, he's got to work on his pincer grasp, and so it's working, yay! But I think what has been incredibly rewarding about these puffs is I make my own baby food, like my own pureed stuff, but there's not really much, like, cooking in that. I'm really literally just steaming stuff and then putting it in a food processor and pureeing it. So there's not really much cooking there, per se. So the puffs were the first thing I actually made completely from scratch. And the first couple times, like, he ate some, like, he was just really, like, he would get this really confused look on his face, and his nose would get all scrunched up, and he's like, what is this texture? And he would just kind of spit it back out. And today, actually, I was so shocked. He ate, like, 10 of them. I was so excited. Like, he would put them in there and make the scrunched up face, but then I would see him, like, push it to the side of his mouth with his tongue, and he would chew it with his gums, and then he would just get this big smile on his face, because it has banana puree in it, so they actually taste like bananas. So I think once he starts chewing it, he gets the flavor, and he gets really excited about it. So it was so cool. I'm not going to lie, guys, emotional mom, but I teared up a little bit when I saw how happy he was eating them. It just made me so excited. Here was something I had physically made for my little boy, and just to have him be so happy eating them, it made my day. So I'm all about the puffs, and I'm all about the homemade puffs, because they're so clean. There's, like, nothing bad in them whatsoever. No sugar, no processed junk, no chemicals. It's awesome. So, and it's got the infant rice cereal in it, which I don't know about you guys out there, but my son he never liked the rice cereal. Like, we started with that, and he just didn't like it. I can't say I blame him. I'm sure it was bland and gross. It smelled gross to me. So he's never been a big fan of it, but I know the pediatrician really recommends it because it's got all the added iron and vitamins and stuff in it. And so we've really struggled trying to get him to eat any. So here's a great way to get them to eat some, and they don't even know it. The homemade puffs. So there is a link to that. It's on our... I'm going to have to check and see. I'm pretty sure I put it on the home base board on Pinterest. But I know I did tweet a link to it too, so go check out Twitter and just scroll backwards on my feed and you should be able to find it. It should be on there, but it's super easy and it makes a lot. So yeah, that's my awesome crush of the week. And here's a little tip, and I got this off of Pinterest too. Can you guys not tell that I'm like a complete Pinterest junkie? I'm such a stay-at-home mom. I find all my ideas on Pinterest. I don't know about you guys, but I obviously drink my coffee, and those little like coffee mate like creamers, when you're finished with it, don't throw the container away, because if you wash it out, it's the perfect container for like snacks for puffs and Cheerios and Goldfish and stuff like that, because it's got the little flip cap and you just shake it and a couple come out. It's perfect. So there's my little tip. If you do make some homemade puffs and you want something to store them in, hang on to your coffee cream containers. So there you go. There is my little crush of the week, my lifesaver, my happiness, homemade puffs. All right, so what is our quote this week? I love this quote. I'm going to show my little nerdy side here a little bit, okay? So, because this quote comes to us from Lord of the Rings. Yeah, you heard it right. Lord of the Rings. Holy cow. It's been a long week. Can you not tell? I'm just sounding crazy. All right, this came from Gandalf specifically, if you want to know who spoke this specifically in The Lord of the Rings, Gandalf. But I just like to say it's from J.R.R. Tolkien, because he's the one who wrote The Lord of the Rings. So, all right, so our quote is, "Some believe that it is only great power that can hold evil in check. But that is not what I've found. I found it is the small things, everyday deeds, by ordinary folk that keeps the darkness at bay." I think that is so cool. I love it. I love it. I love it. It reminds me of that song we all sang when we were little, the "This Little Light of Mine, I'm Gonna Let It Shine." And that quote just reminds me of that, because I think we forget as adults, we assume that stuff like that, "This Little Light of Mine" and doing ordinary good deeds, that it all sounds so childish and like it's for children. But as adults, we possess the power to impact someone's day with a good deed or a small action. And so I think that's cool that we can kind of banish the darkness away with just doing something small. So make today that day. Make every day one of those days to change someone's day. And you can do that by doing the simplest thing: giving your children the quality time they need and deserve. I totally think we all could remember that occasionally. So please make the choice this week to put down your phone, even if it means you have to pause this podcast and finish it later. Put down the phones, put down your tablets, step away from your computer, give your kids some attention, be that little light, and let it shine this week. All right, guys, I said it before, but I'm going to say it again. You're all amazing. You're the reason why I do this every week. Thank you all so much for listening, and I will hit you all up next week. All right, everybody, be those little lights. Let them shine.